So usually Nate and I, we try to share a story or something to get you really excited about the episode. Now today, I don't have a story other than this. This episode is really, really important. If we want to help our players go from reacting, that when I use the term is acting without thinking, to responding, which is thinking, then acting, we've got to understand some of the concepts and some of the strategies that Megan Bartlett shares today from her organization, We Coach. In this episode, we're going to dive kind of into the shallow end of the pool when it comes to brain science and the stress response systems. But I promise you, there's some fascinating stuff and some really important stuff and some practical stuff that's going to help you to support your players. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin alongside my co-host Nate Sanderson. And every week in 30 minutes or less, we're giving you transformational leadership tools and strategies. This podcast is brought to you by Thrive On Challenge, which provides mentorship for coaches to help them grow as a coach and build their culture. You can learn more at thriveonchallenge.com. You're listening to episode 116, Helping Players in the Stressful and Emotional Moments with Megan Bartlett of weallcoach.com. Okay, I am really, really excited to have Megan Bartlett on the podcast today from We Coach, weallcoach.com is her website, but she's someone that I connected with a few months ago. She got me reading on some incredible stuff, and Nate and I are both really excited to be picking her brain. Now, Megan, just for our listeners, if you wouldn't mind, just kind of give a little bit of overview of what you do at We Coach and how you got into this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be with you guys. We're lucky at We Coach that we get to work with coaches. That's how we spend our time. And we are focused on helping them become more brain aware, really is the sort of meat of it. But with a special focus on working with coaches who work in urban underserved communities and come into contact with young people who have a lot going on in their lives, and how that may show up for them when they come to practice or to games, and making sure that coaches can create the best environments possible for them.
Now, when you're typically working with people to educate in there, like what does that look like as far as kind of coming in and helping educate these coaches? Because the stuff you're sharing, I know you work with some of those areas that are less served, and that are in really, really high need. But I think most kids today are going through a lot of stuff, right? Regardless of their situation. So it's going to be applicable for all our coaches out there. But tell us a little bit about what kind of looks like when you're working with coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really important point is that we tend to work with coaches who are working with kids in underserved communities who have a lot of need. But you're exactly right that this kind of work is applicable across athlete populations. The continuum is just about the amount of stress that young people experience, right? And we tend to be working at one end of the spectrum with kids who've experienced overwhelming stress or trauma, but stress has an impact on the brain in, you know, sort of wherever you are on the continuum. And so understanding that and understanding what happens in those moments for athletes is critical to making sure that coaches can create those safe and supportive environments that athletes need to thrive. And so we do that in lots of different ways. Often it starts with some sort of, you know, kind of training program, but we like for it to be a relationship between us and the coaches and or the organizations where the coaches are working so that we can create an ongoing dialogue. Learning about this once is great. Learning about this and then being able to play with it as you work with young people and be able to push it back and forth through the lens is actually how you see change. We want people to know about this, but even more than that, we want people to be able to do something with what they know.
So you just kind of gave me what I think I want to kind of hone in real quick on, which is you use the word stress and trauma. And you know, I think stress is natural to sport, right? Like there is going to be stressful situations, and there's stressful situations are actually, from my understanding, very important to character building, right? And our ability to survive in the world. So, You know, what is the difference between stress and when something is a stressful situation and then it becomes a traumatic situation?
Great question. And you're exactly right that stress, you know, the answer to too much stress is not no stress, right? It's never, it's not that if you've had too much stress that you want to sort of put yourself in bubble wrap and never have any stress again, or else you won't learn, right? Stress is essential to making sure that we learn new things. But when it becomes a challenge is when it's overwhelming for young people. And that can look like something like a major life event that floods the system sort of from in that moment, young people are overwhelmed and have no control over their experience. Or it can look like a series of overwhelming, challenging experiences. You know, the going to school and not knowing if where you'll go home that night, or not knowing if there will be food on the table that night, or not understanding, you know, not being sure whether or not the rest of your family members will be safe. Those are things that when kids are dealing with them and have no control over, because they're so overwhelming, they actually change the stress response system. And that, I would say, is the difference between the ability to sort of manage the regular rhythms of stress and what happens when you're talking about trauma.
You know, I love that you talk about the lack, or the they need to have control, right? And they have that lack of control. That's when it becomes really, really problematic. One of the things is we're kind of about to dive in here into some of the, you know, I really want to ask about some of the systems that maybe can help our coaches. But you said the word brain science. And I know if I hear brain science and I'm a coach, I'm going, well, wait, now I need to know about brain science? Like, do I need a PhD to coach high school basketball or, you know, middle school wrestling? Yeah. Like that can be really intimidating. So why don't you start to give us a little bit of background on like what you mean by brain science, so that pretty much anyone that's listening to this podcast can understand.
Definitely not that you have to have a PhD in brain science, but understanding the stress response system specifically is something that tells us so much about behavior. It tells us so much about what a young person can and can't tolerate, what they can and can't do, and how to actually move them forward. You know, the thing that I think is so hopeful about working with young people who've been exposed to trauma is that because the brain is plastic and use dependent, because it can change and the parts that you use the most become the strongest, that when you understand that, you understand that young people can change. They can get better at a skill, right, at learning their sport, and they can get better at managing the stress and behaviors that come from feeling that overwhelming stress. And so there's, you know, we're lucky to work with Dr. Bruce Perry and the Child Trauma Academy. And one of the things that I love that he always says is that the answer to every question about the brain is that it's a little more complicated than that. Right? The brain is an incredibly complicated system. And, you know, we're sort of giving coaches some very basic understanding of it so that they can put young people's behavior through a lens that tells them that this is something that's not actually in their control. It's a skill they need to build, as opposed to sort of willful, disobedient, or challenging behavior, which is what coaches tend to jump to when they see the kinds of ways young people react when they have a dysregulated stress response. Coaches assume that that behavior is, you know, sort of willful and aimed at them. And if they can understand what's actually going on with stress response, they can understand that what the young person needs to do is build the skills to manage their stress, not be punished for the reaction they have to stress.
I think what you're touching on here, like, is so, so important. Nate and I were actually diving a little bit into this with some coaches at our retreat recently in Utah. And I love how Daniel Siegel phrases it in his book, The Whole Brain Child. It's not that they won't, it's that they sometimes can't. And we actually, like, looking at the brain and how it controls our behaviors, from my perspective, I think as coaches sometimes, you know, we wouldn't get mad at a player if they couldn't throw a 50-yard pass right on the money. We wouldn't get mad if they couldn't make their three, you know, a three-pointer or make their left-hand layup or, you know, but when it comes to the brain and their choices, we just expect, well, that's, they're just lazy or they're, you know, we just use the, those type of words and those type of titles to describe them as a person or their inability to be able to manage their emotions, to manage their state. I think one of the things that's big here is that having a basic understanding and I'd love for you to even go a little deeper here with this too, is just because it helps us to have empathy for our players in these situations. Like, and I think that that is so important. I know even just putting my daughter to sleep, it can be so frustrating because she's tired, she's had a long day, and I'm having a hard time because I just want her to do something. And I just come from this perspective of that, well, she just won't do what I'm asking her to tell and what I'm telling her to do. But when I flip it from a different perspective of this is where she's at, now I have an opportunity to build we call it character, but it's also like these connections in the brain so that she can manage her estate. Like it's actually just like when we dive into the science around skill development of, you know, strengthening myelin fibers and that people can repeat stuff. It's the same way. Her ability to manage her state is almost trained in a very, very similar way, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Very similar. That's all the skills that we learn are built the same way. And so they take patterned, repetitive, rhythmic experiences for us to hold on to them, right? Everybody who plays sports or as a coach knows that that's how you learn physical skills, right? You do them over and over again. They're patterned, they're repetitive, they're rhythmic, and that's how we build those connections in the brain. The same is true for all of these skills that you need in order to manage your response to stress. And all the other things that you're talking about with from a sort of broader character perspective, the same is true then, right? How do you interact with your teammates? How do you stick with something even when it's hard? All of those things are things that come from practice. And they're harder to do when you have a dysregulated stress response, right? So if you've experienced trauma or overwhelming stress, what happens is the baseline of your stress response is heightened, basically. So every stress you experience now, your reaction to it is as though you're reacting to a larger stress. And so your stress response is, it's great to have a really heightened stress response if you're being chased by a bear, right? You want your stress response to really kick in then. But if you've experienced that too many times, or you get chased by a bear and you have to go home to the bear every night, then when you experience something that's sort of normal challenge in school, in at work, in sports, then you react, your body reacts as though you're being chased by a bear, because that's become the strongest part of your brain.
Megan, I wonder if you could put that into a little more specific context for coaches. You know, we talk about how the stress tends to pile up on itself and we start to learn that reaction, or players, you know, that are experiencing trauma off the court are wired in a certain way when they come on the court and they respond, you know, similarly, even if it's not an appropriate context, as you mentioned, in practice. But for a coach out there that, you know, is starting to wonder maybe about their players, as you've kind of given this general description, what does that look like in a practice? Like, what are some of the behaviors that a coach might encounter that we might be able to recognize as, you know, this is just sort of a part of the limbic system responding to this sense of threat or the sense of stress? What does that look like kind of on the ground for us?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the one way that you can really, you know, start to see patterns is when those reactions are so just sort of disproportionate to the circumstance. I was coaching a recreation basketball team and worked with a young man who I came to find out was going through some significant things in his family outside of basketball. And when we would scrimmage, you know, he was pretty talented and competent and was sort of one of those kids who everybody liked and was generally had it pretty easy. And then we would scrimmage and he'd be going for a rebound or something and he'd get bumped up under the boards just like you do, right? You know, sort of normal contact in basketball. And one time he just came up swinging, right? Like no look, just swinging for whoever was near him. And he actually caught one of his own teammates instead of the other team, which I assume was probably the target. But either way, the contact and coming up swinging was completely disproportionate to the, you know, 14 to 12 first quarter moment where somebody was going for a rebound, right? It just didn't fit the circumstance. And so I think those are the kinds of things that you see that are just so, so at odds with what I'm air quoting normal responses would be.
You know, we talked a little bit earlier about how these skills to be able to manage and improve in these areas can be trained, right? They can be trained. What are some, you know, so coaches are going, all right, got to train these things. I've got a drills for working on my shooting, my ball handling, my hitting, my swinging. Do you have any drills that maybe you could share, like a quick one or two that coaches might be able to try out with their team?
Yeah, so I think you train it, like you said, you train it just like a physical skill, which has sort of everything to do with the dosing of the experience of stress, right? So stress is overwhelming or can be traumatic when it's unpredictable, severe, or prolonged, right? But so that sort of, those are the tells of stress that are damaging to the stress response system. Normal stress that's controlled, moderate, and predictable is actually how we become resilient, right? That's actually how we learn skills. It's how we how we're able to take on new tasks and learn new things. In terms of how we help coaches help kids learn these things, part of it is making the stress controllable, predictable, and moderate, right? So that young people know when we're sort of turning up the stress dial on them, right? They know this stress is coming and they have some control over their experience with it. It's predictable, it happens, they know what happens afterwards, and it's not overwhelming in that way, right? It's moderate. So experience of these patterned repetitive rhythmic activities help us regulate the stress response. So it's like you practice being stressed and then you can come back and have control over bringing your body back down, actual physical control over your breathing and your heart rate and all the things that get stressed in your body when your stress response goes off.
The thing you said there, I liked, you talked about, you know, you're letting them know you're turning up the dial,
yeah.
Right? I think that's so important, is that coaches are working with players to help them identify their own triggers, like what triggers that. And so that you've had that conversation, because I think so often, you know, when we approach it only, we're only handling it when it becomes enraged, right? When the limbic Absolutely. System's firing. So I think this really leads to one of the questions I had for you, which is our response in those moments and how important that is. Now, the old school response, right? And we'll go, I'm going to go there, and you don't have to comment necessarily on him, but like the Tom Izzo thing this last year is always like a big thing that people like talk about. That type of response, some people would say, well, it's toughening them up, it's making them harder. Maybe, you know, you could say as a coach, I'm putting them under stress and I'm helping them, right? What are your thoughts on those type of response, and what is the best way to respond?
A dysregulated adult will never regulate a child. So Tom Izzo is not regulated in that moment. So he is not creating an environment in which anybody can learn. So in order for young people to not display explosive behavior, not get triggered by the stress in their experience, our response is actually one of the most critical things in the most critical parts of the experience. Our response has to be predictable. It has to be consistent, and it has to not be disproportionate to the circumstance, which is what, in my opinion, that my dad went to Michigan State and is a huge big Spartan fan. My partner at WeCoach is a Spartan alum. Like, you know, go Sparty. But my personal opinion of that is that that is a completely disproportionate response to the circumstance, which creates a lack of safety for the people around him. The bigger challenge, I think, with that is that we use someone like Tom Izzo as a model for youth coaches. What Tom Izzo can do with older basketball players who have had a lot of experiences with, you know, who for whom basketball is a huge portion of their life, isn't right, certainly. I would say tough love is sort of this misnomer, that kind of yelling, screaming, being in someone's face, disproportionate response does not create an ideal learning environment for anyone at any level. But what those young men can tolerate, because he's built relationships with them, and because they spend so much time invested in that world, is so different from what youth coaches and youth athletes experience. And we have no models for what that should look like. We assume that what Tom Izzo is doing is what you should be doing when you're coaching six-year-olds, because there's no other model. I would say it's never right. It's not creating the best learning environment. And it's particularly not right when you consider the difference in experience between Tom Izzo's athletes and most youth athletes.
I think you hit on a big piece there, which is we've got to be able to manage our own state before we can try to help players manage their own. And I think, part of me wants to have like these drills I can do and put my daughter through to train the emotional intelligence to be able to do it. But the reality is, I know that the best way to do it is my ability to train my skill. First off, I got to manage my state and then be able to communicate with her in those moments when she's struggling to go to bed, right? Or my players, when they're struggling with those things, it first starts with me. I think one thing we could struggle with, you know, coming back to what I said earlier, which is sometimes that it's not that they won't, it's that they can't. Some coaches might be going, well, are you just giving players excuses for bad behavior? Do you run into that a lot?
The common understanding is that if a young person just chooses to, then they will do whatever I told them to do, because in a lot of cases, that's how they learned, right? And they were able to tolerate it, right? Some people are able to tolerate because they have other supports in their life, because they haven't experienced overwhelming stress or trauma. They actually can tolerate a little yelling from their basketball coach, because in other parts of their experience, they're very safe, they're very secure, they're very well attached.
They can tolerate, but does that mean that it's still good for them? Like,
no.
Like, right? Because that, no. Yeah.
Right?
Like, just because they can tolerate it and just be like, some people are like, well, that makes that player tick. Just because it's effective at getting them to do what you want them to do doesn't necessarily mean that you're growing them in character or emotional intelligence or any of that stuff, right?
Absolutely. Right? Just because they can tolerate it. But because they can tolerate it, it can often get conflated with how they learned, right? So the people who played for Bobby Knight and came out on the other side have this understanding that, like, he made me who I am, right? Which isn't untrue, but he could only do that because you were the kind of person who could tolerate his coaching, right? It doesn't mean that you wouldn't have had better outcomes with another coach who created a safer and more supportive learning environment for you. It just means that you could have tolerated that. And what gets lost, I think, are the dozens, likely hundreds, maybe thousands even, of people who didn't make it because of that coaching style.
Kind of stumbled on that has really helped our players, I think, in terms of being able to anticipate stressors. As part of our three-game kind of routine now has become, you know, we go through our key points for the game and maybe a couple of things about our matchups, and we go out for our warm-up, and we always come back and circle up one more time in the hallway at the seven-minute mark. Mm. And at that point, I just give our team a reminder of, you know, we know that we're going to make mistakes. We know this officiating crew is going to blow some calls tonight. We know that our parents in the stands are not going to be happy with that, and that's going to add to the you know, the stress of the environment or whatever. And we sort of come back to that. Just remember who we want to be in those moments. You know, and when that becomes a consistent part of your conversation throughout your practices and then throughout your, you know, your game, not only your preparation, but coming back to that at halftime or post game, it's amazing to me, you know, players that have a reputation for, you know, a short fuse or whatever the terminology is we give the kids like that, that when you give them the ability to anticipate those triggers and sort of like, this is just, we know we're going to go through this, and give those little reminders of how do we want to be when it hits the fan like that, how much more able they are to handle those instances rather than what I used to do, you know, early in my career, which was, we know that there's going to be bad officiating and that the other team's going to give us a trap that we're going to struggle with, and then we don't handle it well. And then after the game, I yell at them and I say, well, what did you expect?
Right.
Well, we never really articulated those expectations to be able to moderate our response.
Totally. I love everything that you said just then. I think being able to anticipate it, being able to recognize it in the moment, it are huge parts of this skill building, right? Being able to say, to have some recognition of sort of what happens in your body when you're close to sort of blowing your fuse or whatever. I would say that the thing that I would add to that is that I think there are also so many moments in sport that we can predict as ways for us to reset, and getting in the habit of doing those resets is really important, right? So maybe we made it through that trap that we didn't think we were going to be able to handle, but it did work us up a little bit. And so making sure that we're making use of every out of bounds play to sort of take three breaths. Do you know, in basketball, I always think about free throw routines are so centering and setting for so many. You know, this is like what I do when I'm about to do a free throw. I touch the ball a certain way. I touch my teammates a certain way. Like everything is scripted in that way and ritualized. And it's this clear reset moment. And so thinking through how can you use those reset moments to also then sort of help regulate. You know, you can tell you didn't go overboard, but you were elevated, right? So how do I get myself back to a state of more control?
Well, and I think the other thing working with young people is that most of them have never been challenged in that way to, number one, be able to recognize and articulate their mental or emotional state as a response to a stressful situation. And the second half of that, of, you know, JP's the rare parent out there that's thinking about getting his child to bed in terms of her mental and emotional state rather than just
I just want sleep, all right? I'm just here.
But I think that can be a challenge for coaches because most of us probably never experienced that in our playing days either, of being able to recognize and be able to respond to those moments. And, you know, I was just having this conversation with a coach this week about how do you engage in those conversations in a way that's not threatening to the player, where you're not necessarily calling them out and you're, you know, shaming their behavior, but trying to be able to be objective in terms of, again, asking how do we want to respond when those stressors happen? And one of the things that I suggested to him was trying to use third-party examples and talk sort of like outside the fishbowl of when you saw this happen, whether it's an example of something from YouTube, from another team that responded in a poor way, or something that we used to use all the time too, was just taking movie clips or movie scenes and talking about, you know, the player that was in this situation, the player that responded this way, the coach that responded like that, so that nobody's personally talking about their own behavior, but you can start to slowly walk those back to, you know, the expectations that the team would have for each other, for the coach or whatever. But it's kind of a safer way to do it if you can use some, like I said, some objective examples just to start a conversation and bring it back toward your team.
In the previous example you were talking about normalizing mistakes, right? There's just so much to building a culture where mistakes are not just accepted, but encouraged, right? You know, you don't learn if you don't make mistakes. You know, we're not going to get where we need to go if we don't try. And inherent in trying is making mistakes. And so, you know, rewarding the journey, I think, is a big part of that, making sure that that kids can see that, making sure that you accept that for yourself, right? That you're willing to make mistakes and say, I tried this and it didn't work, to kids, sort of saying, here's where being open to feedback yourself, genuinely open to feedback. Lots of coaches are, you know, quote unquote, open to feedback, but really genuinely looking for, seeking out and naming when you've made mistakes as well, right? I think that kind of making that part of just what we do here is a huge part of how young people can start to manage that stress better.
I love that. You just, the name it to tame it, right? Type of thing, but yeah. Also just within yourself of like, we make mistakes here, not just tactical or technical mistakes, but we make, and not like there's like Nate said, there's such a shame factor that so often we approach, oh, it's lazy. We put these labels on it.
Right.
The other one that I know that I really work with coaches a lot is the connect and redirect thing, where it's just, you really have to be able to work with them. You know, just letting them know that you see that they're frustrated. You don't have to accept, and this comes back to the can't versus won't thing. Like you're not saying that behavior is acceptable. You're just saying, I understand, right, how you're feeling. Like I see that you're feeling that way. And you got to do that before then you can help them to redirect. But then it really should be helping them to redirect through questions of, and I think this is what's huge. When you ask players and you get them to a point where they can actually step back and reflect on their behaviors, most of the time they're going to say, yes, they could have handled it a better way. And they're going to be pretty clear on exactly how they should have handled it. And then you can just take it to a whole other level when you just say, well, how can I help you before to keep you from getting in that state? And when, if you do still get to that state, how can I help you in that moment?
Yep.
And then you're just becoming this. This is where, you know, I'm big on, I'm calling them up in that moment. I'm not calling them out.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. You know, I think that's a huge piece of understanding that. And I love the way you said it was, when they can get to a place where they can recognize what happens, they know the answer, right? And that's the part of this, like, can't versus won't that I've never understood, is that actually part of a coach's frustration is that they know a kid knows what to do, right? Like, they can parrot back to you exactly what you told them they're supposed to do in those moments. It's truly that in that moment, they can't, right? The part of, you know, it's the, what were you thinking, right? And the answer is actually that they weren't, right? And that's part of what you'd start to understand when you understand the stress response, is that the stress response shuts down the part of the brain where reasoning happens, right? And in order to get to reasoning, we have to regulate the stress response first. We have to feel safe, and the best way to feel safe is to be connected. So we have to regulate, relate, and reason. And that's Dr. Perry's entire model, built based on what you need to know about the brain, is that you can't reason without those other two things. And if coaches understand that, and if can say those things, you know, like, I understand how hard it is to do what you wanted, what you know you're supposed to do in that moment, that's, I think, your point, calling up and not calling out.
So that's it for our conversation with Megan. You can check out her website at weallcoach.com. And she's also on Twitter at Megan A. Bartlett. We'll have her details in the show notes for this episode. Lastly, if you find this podcast helpful, or any of these podcasts helpful, but you're still struggling with your culture, my book, Calling Up, it's got a simple blueprint with a host of strategies that are very, very relatable and practical for coaches out there. It's all in a very fairly short book, and it's an easy read. So you can get it on Amazon, Calling Up, Discovering Your Journey to Transformational Leadership. Great book for Christmas and as you come into the new year.